Welcome to Beyond the Beltway, featuring analysis of national politics, occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Republican Chris Veronis and Democrat Dan Johnson. We're all filling in as your host tonight on behalf of the beloved Bruce Dumont, who wishes us all the best as he recovers from some health issues. But after the debate between President Joe Biden and disgraced convict Donald Trump, we're here to dissect the news and determine what our republic is going to do next. We are hopeful we're joined by our Republican friend,
Eric Cohn.
Eric Cohn, libertarian Eric Cohn, if he's available. We'll find out as we get there. But for now, right now, we wanted to ask Republican Chris Veronis, how are you feeling about the disgusting charlatan at the head of your party's ticket, Donald Trump?
It's a great question, Dan. After 90 minutes, I came to the conclusion that the Democratic Party is the greatest existential threat to democracy right now, right before our eyes.
Is that right?
All along, you know, for the last 8 years, we were told by the Democratic Party that Donald Trump was the existential threat. And now we've learned that a man so close to dementia is the thing that's preventing a complete and total collapse of democracy. I'm shocked. I'm shocked that the Democratic Party all this time kept the truth from the American people.
You mean it
lied
was-
to us, lied to us. And we see there in 90 minutes, the galling, glaring truth. It's too bad. It's a sad day.
So the Democrats were the ones that were lying to you about all those felons and ruffians that were trying to kill members of Congress in order to install their candidate?
No.
I guess I missed it.
The Democratic Party lied to us that Joe Biden is our best chance to stop a collapse of democracy.
Well, that would be a primary election that was held. And by the way, so there was a candidate. He ran, a member of Congress, a distinguished gentleman from the great state of Minnesota. He ran, and his entire platform was President Biden is in his 80s. So we should have someone in our generation.
And look how he did in his 80s.
And guess what? That guy didn't win. So we knew that Donald Trump is pushing 80. Joe Biden is 80.
Dan, don't get me wrong. Joe Biden should continue to run for the presidency.
He's got the nomination.
Absolutely. He should continue to run.
And we may... we're joined by neither a Republican nor a Democrat, but virtually libertarian.
Eric Cohn.
Eric Cohn is with us tonight. Eric, how are you?
I'm doing all right. Now that it seems that the internet has decided to work again. So we'll see if it continues to keep me connected to both of you for hopefully the rest of the program this evening. I see you've already gotten into it about the debate. I don't know what you said because I was trying to get reconnected to this, but I'm just going to jump in midstream because I want to ask both of you this question. I want to know if you think after what we witnessed on Thursday night and the reaction that came immediately afterwards, where you had everyone from the New York Times editorial board, some of their columnists, lots of people starting to say Joe Biden can't be the nominee in November. Dan, do you think Joe Biden can continue to be the nominee for the Democratic Party after what we witnessed at the debate?
I'll tell you, it was a lot of senior moments for Joe Biden, no doubt about it. A bad performance in a debate against one of the greatest self-promoters of our country, Donald Trump, an exceptional marketer, phenomenal debater. He tore the field apart in the Republican primaries. Donald Trump is great at what he does. Joe Biden is great at what he does, which is serving as the president. Excellent president. Atrocious debater and has his senior moments. So to me, Joe Biden is the Warren Buffett of running governments. He is old, but exceptional and the best we've got in the country. Do I want him juggling or playing pickup basketball or going toe-to-toe in like improv comedy? Absolutely not. He's not good at that stuff. I want a calm, patient, wise, old school, excellent president. Luckily, we have that in Joe Biden.
Notice what Dan did there, Eric. Dan's has got a gift for whistling past the graveyard, but not like tonight. I mean, I think that was a Beethoven concerto. He just whistled right there. The Joe Biden that performed during those 90 minutes cannot win this race. I think it was David Axelrod who said that a presidential campaign is an MRI for the soul. It's also a Navy SEAL boot camp every single day for 4 or 5 months. Joe Biden cannot withstand the rigors of a presidential election. He cannot do another debate. He could probably read a teleprompter. This candidacy is breaking right before our eyes. And the panic right now has subsided. The leadership of the Democratic Party circled the wagons around Biden. But we're just painfully looking for the next misstep to happen. And by the way, the polls aren't even in yet.
I'll tell you what, you're probably right. Donald Trump, he's an excellent campaigner. He is a masterclass. He is almost certainly a better candidate than any Democrat. He is the best self-promoter in the country.
It's too bad.
And that's true. It's true that it's an electoral challenge for anybody running against Donald Trump, who is exceptional at self-promotion. That makes it tougher for us to win.
What a shame that the Biden campaign didn't have Dan doing right expectations before the debate.
But it's
what
true.
What a shame.
But you know what's true? Joe Biden is a much better president than Donald Trump was. The challenge is Donald Trump is almost certainly a better candidate than Joe Biden. Donald Trump is an exceptional candidate.
Well,
just happens to be an atrocious president, but an exceptional candidate.
I'll tell you what Donald Trump did that was unbelievable, and that is show restraint. This guy is hungrier to win than Joe Biden is. That was clear after 90 minutes, aside from the falsehoods and myth-truths, and there were plenty on his side. The guy showed restraint.
Speaking of restraint,
when it mattered.
I think it's time for us to restrain this excellent conversation as we take it to a commercial break.
.145/92 .180/111
.182/100 And I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest. And then a stroke.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life.
A lot of people don't understand, including myself, I didn't, now I do, the impact of having a stroke.
My memory is shot.
When I woke up, I couldn't speak.
Lowering your high blood pressure could save you from a heart attack or stroke. If you've stopped your treatment plan, restart it, or talk to your doctor about creating one that works better for you, start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org.
It's a new life, but I'm going to make it better. I'm coming back. Ask your doctor, check your blood pressure.
Brought to you by the American Heart Association, American Medical Association, and the Ad Council.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Dr. Nia Hergaris with today's tip for kids from the American Academy of Pediatrics. As parents, we want our children to grow up healthy and strong. That means helping teens take responsibility for their health as they become young adults. One way to do that is to make sure they have one-on-one time with their pediatrician. That helps them become comfortable talking about any health issue with their doctors and with you. So make sure to give your teen a voice. It's good for their health. For more on teen health, visit healthychildren.org.
I think it's just vapor.
Vaping is safer than smoking, isn't it?
There's really not even that much nicotine in them, right?
One vape pod has as much nicotine as one pack of cigarettes.
My kid knows it's dangerous.
5.4 million American kids vape, and most think it's harmless. Get your head out of the cloud. Talk to your kid about vaping. Visit talkaboutvaping.org. That's talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
We are back on Beyond the Beltway. Eric Cohn filling in this week for Bruce Duke. Apologies again for the technical problems in that first segment. Hopefully I'm back for good. If I just happen to vanish, don't send anyone looking after me. It is just the internet. It will have failed me, but hopefully it will hang on for the rest of the program this evening. Thrilled to be joined by Democrat Dan Johnson and Republican Christopher Ronas. Coming up at the top of the second hour, again, internet connection problems notwithstanding, we will be joined by Frank Garrison, who is an attorney with the Pacific Legal Foundation, to discuss what has happened with the Supreme Court this week, and a whole lot going on there, a whole lot more coming up in this next week. But the primary focus for this hour is going to be on the debate that we saw on Thursday night. And Dan, I want to go back to you. I hear what you're saying. You know, the Democrats have been doing a good job of laying out their argument for how, from a policy perspective, from a legislative accomplishment perspective, from an executive action perspective, Joe Biden has had a very good presidency. But when the American people look at the person who was on stage for 90 minutes on Thursday night, do you think they can have confidence that this is a guy who is fully in charge of the executive branch of the federal government when they're seeing him have these senior moments, this trailing off into nowhere, statements like we beat Medicare or Medicaid, which I still have yet to see anything beyond a reading the entrails of dead birds, kafefe kind of attempt to say what this means? Can the American people really be confident this is a man who's running the executive branch right now?
Yeah, absolutely. He's in his 80s. He's going to have senior moments. There's no doubt about it. But the reason why I think we're confident is that, unlike in 2016, when an exceptional candidate, Donald Trump, can lie his way into office, Donald Trump can't escape the reality of his record. And I think persuadable, independent-minded voters are going to recognize he's an older man. But they can look at the 4 years under Biden and compare it to the four lawless years under Trump and decide they and the country are and the world have been better served under Biden's administration with hundreds and hundreds, as you know, of people that work for the president than the hundreds and hundreds of people under Trump, dozens of which are now in prison.
Yeah, but let's go to you, Chris. The people aren't electing hundreds and hundreds of people. It actually implicates what I want to talk to Frank Garrison about later with Chevron and the administrative state. They're not electing those people. They're electing a president of the United States. And Reagan, yes, was older when he was reelected in 1984, much younger than Joe Biden is now. How can they be confident that this is a person who is fully in charge? And if you remember the...
I hear you. Chris, you want to take that?
Joe Biden is the singular standout, a political figure on the political landscape right now. I think Bernie Sanders is 82, 83, sharp as a tack. Elizabeth Warren is like 75, 76. She's on her game. Joe Biden isn't, noticeably so. It's evident to everyone. The schedule that he keeps, 10 to 4, nothing before 10 a.m., nothing after 4 p.m. This absurd inside joke among the White House staff, Operation Bubble Wrap is what they call it, that they surround him, make sure he doesn't fall, he doesn't have a senior moment. It's ridiculous. By the way, I should add, the Democrats, the Biden campaign, wanted this debate. They set up the terms of this debate, and they lost it miserably. Huge setback. And Donald Trump, with animal cunning, recognized it and said, all I have to do is show a little restraint, a little bit of competence, and I can win it. And that's exactly what happened. Dan, you call it like good campaigner. Good campaigning wins presidential elections, and Donald Trump's on his way to win this one as of today.
Yeah, Dan, was it a mistake by the Democrats, by the Joe Biden campaign, to A, want this debate and this early, and to set up the rules in the way that they did? You know, it was in 2020 when Donald Trump spent so much time talking over Joe Biden, and it gave him that opportunity to say, ah, shut up, man, which was probably Biden's best moment in that debate. Trump made himself look so terrible by muting the microphone, by not giving him an audience to play to. Were these tactical errors that Joe Biden's campaign made?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, the debate was won by Donald Trump on poise and presentation and style.
And that's incredible.
That's true. I mean,
that's incredible that a guy like Donald Trump.
Joe Biden?
No, I think it's it's a bad day and it's a political mistake. But our saving grace is that the political tactics of a presidential campaign aren't ultimately, in my view, and I could be wrong, but in my view, the small segment of the population that are undecided and are persuadable and are open-minded, I believe they will ultimately judge the Biden administration's accomplishment versus the Trump administration accomplishment. And I don't think they're going to finally, if you're open-minded and persuadable, and, you know, 5%, 10% of the electorate may be that way, I don't think your style as a campaigner is going to ultimately make the decision whether you're going to pick somebody that's brought peace and prosperity or somebody that brought chaos and destruction and a recession. I just don't think that's where people are going to land. It is possible there are people that will say, well, I thought Trump was slick. He's a great sales guy. I don't care that he lies all the time. I love that he's full of bravado and that he is a sort of a bully, and that he'll throw wild accusations their way. I like that in a president. If that's what some people are into, they're going to vote for Donald Trump. But if they're looking for somebody that is patient, wise, you know, has a few senior moments because he's in his early 80s, I think they're going to pick Joe Biden.
Yeah. Eric, Dan is glossing over one of the most galling takeaways. If you're a person at home, a voter who cares, maybe isn't interested in either candidate. What became evident after those 90 minutes is, I mean, the worst thing that they said about the Trump presidency was that it was detached from reality, had no moral basis for anything that it did, strategically incompetent. That is what we saw of the Biden campaign on Thursday night during those 90 minutes. It's incredible to me that the Biden campaign is imitating the worst parts of the Trump presidency, the worst impulses. It was on full display on Thursday night. And I don't see how any of this is going to reverse itself. I don't see how the ship is going to right itself. It's just going to get so much harder. And the more and more you keep your candidate behind the curtain, the more and more it looks like you have something to hide. And by the way, the polls aren't even in yet.
I'll tell
you.
We
don't even know. We don't even see the impact this is going to have on public opinion. And if those polls continue, if Biden continues to lag, then you could see panic, break through the surface. And you could have the party elders go and sit down, Joe and Jill, and you don't step down, we'll publicly say you should.
That's a real possibility. This is where
if he continues to lag.
See, this is where I think there's a difference between the commentators and the people that are in positions of leadership within the Democratic Party. The commentators, like editorial board writers or columnists or media personalities, they're the ones that would say Joe Biden needs to resign. The people that run governments for a living and can see that they know old people can be excellent at running governments. Nancy Pelosi was not young in her last few terms, exceptionally effective. One of the best speakers of the House in our country's history. Joe Biden has been an exceptional president. If you want to pass legislation.
So Dan, this is my point
and then I'll get to you. My point is there are no party elders. That would say.
Sure, there are.
That would say. What the New York Times editorial board or the Chicago Tribune editorial board or their columnists would say because they have different reasons. Most people that are involved in sort of watching campaigns or people that are quick witted, you know, they may say, hey, Joe Biden's not nearly as quick on his feet as Donald Trump. So therefore, he's not going
to
make it.
I think listeners would like to hear hypothetically how something like that could happen, quite honestly. But it is all hypothetical, and that's my point.
So it's a lot of chatter that will fade.
You think Biden was an exceptional president.
He is an exceptional president.
You think he made good decisions.
He continues to. And that's how it gets turned around.
You think he passed big measures that have helped the country.
These are just facts.
Right?
Yes, these are just facts.
Why is he not ahead then? Why did he want this debate? Why is he trailing in the polls? Can you answer that?
Sure. I think because there's always efforts and opportunities to convince and persuade American voters of the connection between the party in power and the results. As an example, and then we'll go to a break. 20%, there's some poll that said 20% of the people blame overturning Roe v. Wade on Joe Biden because they don't, you know, it happened on his watch. So isn't it Joe Biden's fault? 20% of people believe that. As people come to understand and methodically learn, that's Trump's legacy, is reversing Roe v. Wade. It's not Biden. Biden and the Democrats are doing everything they can to protect reproductive freedoms. The more people learn and understand about the relationship between the party in power and the booming economy that we're enjoying, the better the polls go. With that, we're going to have to go to break, but you'll get the first word back, Chris Baronis. We're back in Beyond the Beltway.
This is Carol Platt-Liebau for townhall.com. In Murphy v. Missouri, the Supreme Court has taken the coward's way out. In a 6-3 ruling, it declined to rule on whether the Biden administration could coerce social media companies to censor and shadow ban people who disagree with it. It said the plaintiffs lacked standing, that those who sued hadn't shown a sufficient injury to bring the case. This ought to be distressing for everyone who cares about free speech. The Biden administration clearly engaged in censorship by surrogate, using social media companies to silence those it couldn't legally silence on its own. But there's good news. First, future plaintiffs can challenge the Biden censorship regime. Second, bad legal news is great political news. Donald Trump could and should make free speech a centerpiece of his campaign. Republicans in Congress can draft laws to protect our First Amendment and draw a contrast with our left-wing government censors.
I think it's just vapor.
Vaping is safer than smoking, isn't it?
There's really not even that much nicotine in them, right?
one vape pod has as much nicotine as one pack of cigarettes.
My kid
knows it's dangerous.
5.4 million American kids vape, and most think it's harmless. Get your head out of the cloud. Talk to your kid about vaping. Visit talkaboutvaping.org. That's talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Matthew.
Huh? Oh, sorry.
It's okay. I just need you to listen to me.
I know that a lot of times, Mom, it might not seem like I'm listening to you, but I am. I hear you. And what you say really does matter to me.
I mean, let's be honest. No kid likes rules, but I get why we have them. I hear you, and I know it's because you care.
All the talks we've had over the years, including what you've told me about not using alcohol and other drugs, they stick with me. And believe it or not, they really do make a difference, especially at times that matter most.
Hey, want a drink?
No, thanks, I'm good. So thank you, Dad, for talking and preparing me for what's ahead.
Thanks, Mom, for never giving up and always being my biggest fan.
Thank you for letting me know what you expect, so I can try to meet your expectations.
Thank you for talking.
For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Let's be honest. The National Symphony may not be in his future, but he wanted to try violin. So you said yes because you love him. And if you love him that much, love him enough to make sure he's buckled up and in the back seat. Find out more about keeping your kids safe in your vehicle at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Show them you love them. Keep them safe. Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
We're back on Beyond the Beltway. Tonight, we are going a little bit unleashed. Chris Varonis, Dan Johnson, two longtime friends. We are now going to battle it out for the next half an hour for your listening pleasure. Chris, tell...
Dan, I got to hand it to you.
Yeah.
The whistling act turned into a full tap dance. your last block before the break.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Thank you.
How do you do it?
You know what? It's your turn. Why don't you tell the people?
Well, it's funny. The abortion issue, I have to admit, the Democrats have been riding it hard and winning on it.
Yes.
And how did this president, this sitting incumbent, whiff on something that was served up to him right down the plate?
Yeah. It was atrocious.
Yeah.
A strikeout.
Yeah.
No doubt.
And as you know,
yeah.
I mean, you are in the political arena.
Yeah.
You are a lobbyist.
I enjoy it.
Optics matter.
Yeah. Look, it was the worst. There's no two ways about it. I know it's a real surrogate can't say this, but I can. It was a horrible night for the Biden campaign. It was. He was a bad candidate Thursday. There's no doubt about it.
So let me ask you this hypothetically, because there are a lot of conspiracy theories going on.
You know
around.
What? Republicans love them.
Well, you know what? I saw it in The Guardian. Not
really?
Exactly a Republican-friendly
That's
publication.
True. That's not.
They said it was a Democratic super operative of some kind, maybe someone tied to a major donor who purposely put this debate in June. So Biden's incompetence, his senior moments, could be on full display.
Yeah.
Now, I don't want to get into that.
Because that's a ridiculous conspiracy theory. But well, I love how juicy it is.
Yeah, it's very juicy.
You know what? It doesn't matter how
ridiculous. Succulent, you could say.
It's a succulent cornucopia of absurdities. And okay. that is the coin of the realm in Republican politics. The crazier the conspiracy theory, the more Republicans eat it up.
Dan,
they love it.
Dan,
they're like this. They're like, who's the man behind the curtain?
Because we all know, Dan, Democrats never believe in conspiracy theories, right? The
Come
protocols
on.
Of the Elder of Zion.
Come on, like Republicans
Hamas,
like it more.
No, there's no conspiracy
right.
theorizing. So let me ask you this.
I want
the Beyond the Beltway listenership to experience your political acumen.
Yeah, please.
Suppose you were a master political strategist.
All right.
And suppose the Democrats are tanking right
okay.
now.
Okay, sure.
Okay. And suppose Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama came to you and said, Dan, you need to put together a plan of how we do this, how we get Biden out and someone else in. How would you do it?
It's up to Joe. It is Joe Biden's decision. That's the truth.
That's a great answer.
I mean, it's true.
It's a sanitized answer.
But you know what? You could try to get, like, in the actual convention, right? I think there's 3,000 delegates. I could be off by 500 or so. I think there's 3,000. Say there is. So you need 1,500 votes. There are a lot of laws. A lot of those guys were elected. And a lot of the states have laws that you are required. They were elected as Biden delegates. So it's not like
Biden can relinquish those delegates.
That's my point. It's up to Joe. It's entirely his decision.
Well, and that's my question.
Yeah.
How do you get Joe to give up those delegates? How would you do it?
How would Joe Biden decide to resign?
Effectively, yeah.
Right.
But you're going to be the person who's going to do it.
If I'm going to do it, it's only if a doctor says, here's your test, and you're not having senior moments, you're not able to function. Nobody even suggests that. What people are, I mean, in the world of reality, most people are saying like, yeah, he's old. So, you know, he doesn't have 12 hours a day. He doesn't have it anymore.
Well,
but while he's on, he's great. The only way it would happen is if, like, medically, he's not up to snuff anymore, right? It's sort of like when Donald Trump in that last year, people were like, you know, he's going to, like, try to be a dictator, right? Like, he's real clear, he's not going to accept the results. Well, and they said, we've got to invoke the, I think it's the 25th Amendment, right? I forget which amendment it is. But, like, the cabinet can yank him, right, because he's, like, not mentally fit. Right. And there's like a couple other reasons. But the cabinet can, and, you know, we're invoking the amendment. We're getting rid of him.
So
it's something similar to that.
Here's a realistic scenario.
Yeah. But my point is he'd have to be like unable to perform his duties as president. Not that he's not nearly as good as a candidate as Donald Trump is.
Here's an entirely realistic scenario.
All right. Here we go.
The polls
plummet.
The polls are in the low 30s.
Sure.
Maybe even they get into the high 20s. Just unheard of. Yeah. Unheard of in a presidential election.
It's your hypothetical.
It is.
I'm just living in it.
And I'm cranking it.
Do it.
For your benefit.
I'm in it, man. I'm in the matrix.
The listenership.
I just put it in the back of my head. I'm in it.
And suppose Joe Biden falls.
Right.
It's ugly.
Yeah.
It's nasty.
And he can't get up.
Maybe there's blood.
Right. Teeth came out.
You know what happens? I think you need some kind of unity ticket. I think Kamala's out of it.
See, there it is.
You
there it is.
You cannot have Kamala in there.
Because America's not ready for a black woman, right? That's what it is.
You cannot have her in there. Her number's worse than Biden. Talk about word salad. I mean.
All right. We're going to put
So you know what you do?
What do you do?
Gretchen Whitmer.
Okay.
And Raphael Warnock. That's your unity ticket right there.
Great.
Okay.
Great.
Then well, let me give and, it, and you know, you bow to Joe Biden, as you said, the best president of the 21st century. The wise decisions. We're his legatees. We're doing this for Joe.
Right. Yeah.
Joe.
But
it's all a tribute to Joe. You're doing it in his honor.
Okay. So then let me ask the message?
You could grease the skids for Joe Biden to make a statesman-like exit for the country.
Got it.
The country.
Got it.
A sacrificial lamb. It worked well for Jesus. why not Joe Biden?
Who was the operative telling Jesus?
poke holes in that plan.
Oh, so you're playing you know what?
Yeah, I'm playing the Democratic strategy.
No, you're doing well because you're playing to the religious card. Right?
Because
he's the only pious candidate. Not like Donald Trump cares about Jesus. Right?
Totally.
Like, that's your play. Catholic play.
Pious play. He is Catholic.
He is.
It would play well with him.
He's a pious religious man. Joe Biden is.
That's why this plan would work.
You know, I think if Jesus told Joe Biden that he ought to resign as president, he would listen. So that would be my advice. Get to Jesus. Now, let me ask you.
Play the Jesus card.
Let me spin it to you now.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, the Philadelphia Inquirer had a really saucy, feisty editorial. I loved those Philly Inquirer. It was spicy.
What was the Scoville heat level?
He said, it was 9. It was just like
that's not that
just high, like those. You're anyway, right. Like those arrogant New York Times editorial board writers, yeah, for the good of the country, Joe, yeah, resign. Yeah. Oh, blah, blah, blah. You know what he said? You know what the Philly guy said? For the good of the country, Donald Trump, get off the ticket.
Ooh,
they did.
I like it.
They did. Because you know what?
Curveball.
Oh, it's great.
Oh, wow.
And Chris, I'm going to tell you, you'd love the Republican Party, like the non-fascist wing of the Republican Party, right? The guys that are like, maybe we should just cut some taxes, you know, but we still like the rule of law. You know, the minority wing maybe of the party at this
all
point.
All right.
But you now,
wind up here.
You're given the task. Mm-hmm. You got to get a unity ticket. Donald Trump still hasn't picked a VP. Who knows who he's going to pick? And who could be anybody? You've got to pick the reasonable Republican. You got to get Donald Trump out. How are you going to convince Donald Trump for the good of the country? And I'll give you a hint. He's got to promise to pardon him for all of his crimes. And it's a long list.
Yeah, I just don't see Trump being excised from the party. Impossible. Impossible.
There's got to be a way.
Because Trump will burn the ship before it sinks.
Yeah.
He'll burn it down.
Yeah, right.
And that's who he is.
He's the Joker.
He's the arsonist candidate. He is the Joker.
He's the Joker.
In many ways.
Yeah.
But that, I think one thing that you miss or just fail to own up to,
sure,
when we're on this show,
yeah,
is that one half of this country's really angry. Really, really angry. And you could dismiss, yeah, it as white, right, rage or whatever. But the system has failed them. You could take it back to before 9/11. This is a segment of the population who fought these wars.
You just walked away from the hypothetical,
didn't you?
You just walked
maybe
away.
Maybe they came back.
Walked away.
They came back. Their communities are awash in opioids. Maybe they lost their house in the mortgage meltdown. Okay?
Yeah.
And maybe politician after politician is failing them, and all of a sudden you get a chaos candidate come on the scene and,
yeah,
says burn it all down.
Yeah.
Do you think that message
it's
going to play very well with this segment?
Here's the problem.
This is why Donald Trump has a grip on one half of this country because of that message.
Yeah.
I don't like it. It's pretty dark. It's pretty bleak.
Real,
but that's where we are.
It's real dystopian.
George Will said that Donald Trump is the chemotherapy that this nation is undergoing still to this day. It's sad, but it's true.
Yeah.
So I don't see him going away, to answer your question.
But how are you going to do it?
Well, you could put a guy like Burgum in there, who is an establishment candidate.
There you go. Someone
who's not chaos. Someone who's a little order.
Right.
Someone who's from a boring state.
But do you really believe?
No one can remember.
Let me ask you. In North Dakota, it's a glorious place. Let me ask you. Do you really think persuadable voters are like, you know what? I want to burn it down.
Yeah.
And I want Donald Trump to make billions off of Saudi money and Chinese money. Do you really think so?
I think that at the end, these two candidates will be indistinguishable. Indistinguishable.
Let's see what the commercial break says. Because that's going to be very distinguishable from our conversation. We'll see you right after the break. When we come back with Chris Vronis and Dan Johnson, having a great time debating beyond the Beltway.
This is Dennis Prager. Sign up today for an unforgettable experience in Israel this October. Mike Gallagher and I are traveling to the Holy Land on the Stand with Israel tour with our trusted partner, Inspiration Cruises and Tours. This trip of a lifetime to Israel is one you don't want to miss. Register today before it's too late at StandWithIsraelTour.com, StandWithIsraelTour.com, or call 855-565-5519, 855-565-5519.
Jill, why don't you tell the class what you did this weekend?
Well, my dad and I went in search of some magical minnows and found a zillion of them in the stream from our lookout rock. Then my sister and I escaped from an evil slug king and went back to my super twig fort for safety. Then we told stories till it got dark, and the Big Dipper led us all the way home.
Whoa. Where were you, Jill?
We went to the forest. It's not that far away.
Ask your parents to take you and your friends to the forest this week. It's closer than you think. Check out discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Why was the basketball court all wet?
Because the players kept dribbling on it.
The dad joke. Corny, groan-worthy, but also one of the simplest ways to share a moment with your kids.
What did the buffalo say when he dropped his son off for school?
Bye, son.
So take a moment to make your kid laugh, because dad jokes rule. Make your kid laugh today. Go to fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
What if the music stopped? If the familiar voices were silenced? If there were no breaking news updates? What if your companion and connection to your community came with a monthly fee? Don't worry, we're free local radio with you wherever you go. Celebrating 100 years and looking forward to the next 100. We are broadcasters. Text radio to 52886 and let Congress know you depend on your local TV and radio stations. This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Beyond the Beltway, coming at you live from outside the city of Chicago. Dan Johnson and Chris Veronis filling in for the great Bruce Dumont and celebrating 44 years tonight of the anniversary of
happy
this
anniversary.
Happy anniversary. 44 years.
I believe you and I have been here for at least 20 of those
probably,
44 years.
Probably. We are, we sort of showed up when the kid graduated college, and we're hanging out with the kid from college till adulthood.
There it is.
Right? He's had a couple of kids, got married, bought a house, and now it's our turn. It's our time. So our best to Bruce Dumont, and we appreciate Bruce giving us the captain's log. We're going to grab that wheel, and we're going to spin it right now. Chris Veronis. Die hard, longtime conservative Republican. He's in a tough spot because he's got a lawless chaos candidate at the top of his ticket. It's not easy for law and order Republicans these days. It isn't easy. But guess what?
It's funny you talk about law and order, Dan, because as I recall, Donald Trump sure threatened Hillary Clinton to put her in jail.
He did.
You know, and actually, the Democrats are actually doing it. I mean, that's pretty incredible. I mean, like, whoa. I mean, like, we all know, as you say, Trump is a big talker, a great campaigner. He's a TV man.
He's a celebrity.
You know, he knows how to use what the kids call sound bites.
Yeah.
Very well.
He's a celebrity.
Who knew that essentially a county prosecutor in a deep blue state would bring charges that his predecessor declined to pursue?
Right.
That the U.S. attorney declined to pursue,
that
made up a legal theory and indicted him 34 times.
And convicted.
Which will likely be overturned.
Well, here's...
And it's you talk about this lawfare that Democrats are using so effectively. It reminds me of that quote from I don't know who said it.
Right. But probably Winston Churchill.
For my friends, everything. For my enemies, the law.
Yeah.
And Democrats are just brilliant at that.
You mean, I get
weaponizing
it.
The law.
Just like Trump would say.
Like Democratic prosecutors in deep blue states using the law, the apparatus of the law, to punish a presidential candidate, to silence him in the thick of a presidential election. Insane. So what did it mean then? Right. You ask me, how do you activate undecided voters?
Yeah.
Well, how about you use the law against the candidate to take him out of the race completely? How about you penalize him by convicting him? That is intolerable.
So it would have been better.
And of all the cases, this is the worst one. And you, as a constitutional lawyer, you have to give me something, Dan. You have to give me something of
how bad
this case stinks.
You got to tip your hat. You got to tip your hat to the Supreme Court that they have managed to say all of the atrocious, disgusting attacks on the Republic. Well, when Donald Trump says, don't I have blanket immunity? Can't I convene a mob, attack the Capitol with assassination of Nancy Pelosi on their mind to install Donald Trump? Don't I have immunity from that? They could take that ridiculous, offensive argument and say, we're going to have to think about that. By the way, they're still thinking. That decision has not yet been announced. And here it is. July 1 is right around the corner. And gee, I guess we just won't have time to prosecute this attack on our democracy. So what are we left with? We're left with essentially felonies for their paper trail that Donald Trump decided, and these are just facts. He can lie about it, but these are the facts. He wanted to spend $100,000 or $150,000 to his mistress to say, well, how about you not tell people that we had an affair? But I don't want to report that on my federal election campaign. Right. Yeah. I don't want to put that in there. Damn. 150. This is what the case was, right? This is the case.
Yeah.
Don't report that as a campaign contribution. That's a felony. But don't report that. Instead, just, you know, put it in my business documents and we'll just hide it. And that's what he did. And the jury said, well, look, you decided to avoid federal election law, which is very strict. You got to report every dime. Dan, every dime raised, every dime spent.
This is just you and me. Like, yeah. Just tell me, when are you going to take your show to Broadway? You've got a great whistling game.
Yeah.
You got a tap dance game that dodges the questions.
Yeah.
You need to go to Broadway.
You and me,
not the Beltway.
You and me, bud.
Broadway.
We're going beyond Broadway. We're taking this show on the road. And when anytime Bruce wants to take a rest or he wants to put us back in on the bench, Bruce, when you're back, we're here with you. We're going to get a little loosey-goosey because you notice what Chris just did? He just laid out how criminal it was. You could say, like, what do you mean it's a crime not to report your federal expenditures? That shouldn't be a crime. Maybe it shouldn't, but it is. Maybe it shouldn't be a crime that you can't lie on your business records, but in New York, it is. Maybe they ought to abolish that law. Maybe they should. But what he did? Is he didn't want to admit it,
Dan?
So he hid it.
The big advantage that the Biden campaign had for months and months and months is money. They raised money like a juggernaut.
Yeah.
And since Trump was convicted, by a Democratic prosecutor who promised in his campaign to prosecute and convict Trump,
Law and order. No law breaking. He said, I'm actually going to convict
Donald Trump erased the deficit.
That's true.
And erased more money.
But you know what you're saying?
Biden.
You're saying we should have.
Unbelievable.
We should ignore it. Ignore it is what you're saying.
All those dollars are outrage. Outrage by people. You're using the law to silence and handicap a presidential candidate.
Because you know what they're angry about?
Let us vote.
They're angry.
Where's democracy?
Let them get away with it. Let them get away with it.
Now?
That's what they want. Listen, we're going to let you get away with that outrageous argument because you're saved by the bell, Veronis. It's time for us to break. Thank you for listening to Beyond the Beltway with Bruce Dumont. Tonight, with Chris Veronis and Dan Johnson covering for the great Bruce Dumont, we appreciate you. We'll hear you next time live from Chicago.
Welcome back to Beyond the Beltway with Bruce Dumont, live from Chicago. Your co-hosts are filling in for the great Bruce Dumont, Chris Veronis and Dan Johnson. We're here with you live, border to border and coast to coast, and we are joined by a constitutional legal expert to discuss, perhaps, as some would call, one of the biggest impactful decisions in a century, maybe two, the Chevron case reversal. Frank Garrison of the Pacific Legal Foundation is with Beyond the Beltway to share with our radio and television listeners what this decision is, what it means, and how it might change American governments. Frank, take it away, please.
Thank you for having me. So, the Supreme Court reversed the Chevron doctrine, which in 1984, the Supreme Court basically said that, you know, when courts review agency action, an administrative agency like the EPA, they're supposed to read the text of the law, and then if, you know, what Congress said is clear from the face of the law, then courts should apply that rule. But if there's ambiguity in the law, then the court should basically, as long as it's reasonable, take the agency's view of the law. And instead of applying what they think is the best interpretation, the court, they would just go along with what the agency says the law should say. So the Supreme Court finally, after many years of people like myself bringing cases before the court and asking them to overrule Chevron, finally did so.
So you personally must be delighted.
Oh, I'm extremely delighted.
Got
so
it.
I won't say I'm extremely delighted for myself so much as for my clients.
Right on.
Because I represent people that have been subject to government overreach under statutes that clearly don't allow the agency to do what it's trying to do. And, you know, they're stuck and they go into court and try and vindicate their rights. And courts are basically siding with the agency, even though we know the text of the law doesn't allow the agency to do what it's trying to do. So I'm extremely happy for my clients. But yes, I mean, it's been a project of mine and the Pacific Legal Foundation for a long time to try and set the Constitution, you know, to get courts to do their duty under the Constitution and review the law.
Well, people are calling it a legal earthquake, a hugely consequential decision. As though, you know, and one of the advocates for that, do you think that's a fair characterization of the monumental impact of this decision?
I don't know if I would say it's as monumental as it could have been.
Okay.
So there's a couple of things that the court did. It grounded its decision to overrule Chevron in what's called the Administrative Procedure Act. So it basically said that when Congress passed the Administrative Procedure Act in 1944, that Congress said that courts, when they review agency action, should review them de novo, which is, you know, a Latin term for just by them, you know, on their own. Courts should look at the statute and determine what it means, you know, and what the court thinks the best meaning is. So, and shouldn't defer to agencies. Justice Gorsuch, Justice Thomas would have said, no, the Constitution mandates that courts must apply independent judgment and review statutes for themselves and not defer to agencies.
Oh, I got you.
So I will say it's a little bit limited in that respect because technically Congress could go back tomorrow and at least under this opinion, under the Loper-Bright opinion, could say, well, we're reinstating Chevron.
I got you.
So Frank, you need to defer to agencies.
Frank, question. The Administrative Procedures Act doesn't really make for a romantic evening. Like for a couple, those words would never be uttered. How would you explain
this case? Speak for yourself, Chris.
says the constitutional lawyer.
Easy. Retire.
Explain this, how this matters to the man on the street, this ruling by the
court. Okay, so during the New Deal, right, so, you know, for a long time, the Supreme Court had said that Congress cannot delegate executive agencies broad power through statutes, through broad delegations, and under what's called the non-delegation doctrine.
And agencies,
there was also the enumerated.
And I'm sorry to interrupt. Just to help.
agencies are basically the government, right? What Trumpers might call the deep state, but basically like the EPA, the Department of Transportation, the Securities Exchange Commission. Agencies are just what the government does day to day, right? And so,
right. In other words, unelected bodies.
Yeah, our civil servants, you might say.
Yeah. So Congress will, you know, enact something like the Clean Water Act.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, it'll create an agency like the Environmental Protection Agency that administers the statute. So Congress puts duties on these administrative agencies to go out and regulate, to execute the law that Congress has passed. That's what they are. They're there to execute the law that Congress, lays down for the country.
Politicians say, we want clean water. Voters like that. They say, all right, here's where we're going to get clean water. But, you know, year to year, how do you know how much pollution you're allowed to put in? How do you know what you're allowed to put in the rivers? Well, we're going to let the agency tell the businesses and people and farmers how much junk they can put in the water to keep it relatively clean.
And
is that about right?
So, yeah, modernly, Congress passes really broad statutes and gives, the EPA broad authority to fill in the details of statutes.
Got it. They got to figure it out.
Sometimes the agency will, take liberties with that, and they will try and do things that the statute just doesn't allow them to do.
Got it.
But for the Administrative Procedure Act, so during the New Deal, before the New Deal, the Supreme Court had said, Congress, you can't delegate agencies, executive branch agencies, this kind of gap-filling power to essentially make the law. Because if a law is too ambiguous, then the agency can go in and say, well, we think it means this. And they basically lay down a rule that is going to bind the public. And it's Congress really hasn't made the legal choice. So the Supreme Court said for a long time, you can't do that.
Got it.
Congress.
You got to make it clear in what the Congress passes. If not, it's not going to go under the old Supreme Court.
Have we gotten clean air or clean water through Chevron?
I wouldn't say that we've gotten it through Chevron. I mean, the statutes, the Clean Water Act, they allow the agency to enforce the law. And those statutes, for the most part, they give the agencies direction, right? It's like the Sackett case, right? Congress laid down the ability for the Environmental Protection Agency to regulate waters. But the question was, what waters, right? Could they regulate every wetland in the entire country?
That's a good cliffhanger.
Well, no.
Here's the cliffhanger.
They could only regulate
waters
that were jurisdictional.
I see.
Which is waters of the United States, which Congress has the authority to regulate.
Let's jump now to a commercial. Let's jump to a break and let's pick up this wetland conversation where we left off and find out what the Chevron reversal is all about. Back to you in a jiffy.
As a local business owner, you get called every week by marketing companies. We get it. We have hundreds of satisfied customers. Here's what a satisfied client recently said.
Open enrollment is going great. We're hitting record numbers. Thank you so much for this report. It really is amazing to see how the marketing is really shaping our enrollment around the city.
If you're a local business and ready for the next step, visit surroundchicago.com right now. Our experts are ready to help you take your marketing to the next level. Visit surroundchicago.com today.
In the new video series, Fault Lines, Professor Vodi Bonkam examines the threat of woke social doctrine versus biblical justice.
The religion of anti-racism has no redemption. We have to be right about what God requires in this critical moment.
Discover the fault lines beneath today's cultural divide.
What God are you trying to appease?
Fault Lines, the 10-part video series and essential 6-part study guide. Available at salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
We're back on Beyond the Beltway, live from Chicago. Chris Peronis and Dan Johnson joined. Frank, pick up where you left off. You were explaining to us how this amazingly big decision is going to impact the man on the street.
Yeah, so Loeb or Bright, you know, it basically puts judges back in charge of saying what the law is.
Okay.
So they do not defer to executive branch agencies. And when somebody comes into court, you know, when an agency has charged them under a statute or, you know, they're being regulated by the, you know, a rule promulgated by the agency, mm-hmm. when they go into court to vindicate their rights, it's going to be the judiciary, the judge, that says this is what the law is. It's not going to be the agency that says this is what we think the law means and it's ambiguous and so you should... You basically, under Chevron, you must follow what we say the law means. And then they go. Then the agency turns around and enforces the law that they have basically made by getting deference against people. And that's no longer going to be true.
So now so, you're – oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Chris.
Frank, as an extension of what you're saying, could you say, would you agree that this ruling is a setback for the administrative state – maybe even the imperial presidency, which only wants to aggregate power, extra constitutional power, which is to the detriment of the citizenry of the United States. And what this does effectively is it makes Congress do its job, even if it doesn't want to. Is any of that true?
I think all of it in some respects are true. So the administrative state is definitely not as powerful as it was a couple of days ago. You know, judges are going to independently review statutes, which means the president can't direct the executive branch agencies to instill his policies and then go into court and then courts say, okay, that's fine. So it cabins the administrative agencies and it cabins the president who directs the administrative agencies to basically follow what he thinks is the best policy. So it does that in two, you know, it restricts not only the agency, but the president as well, which, you know, I think some people would like that if Donald Trump wins the presidency, you know, and other people's, you know, if Joe Biden's reelected, I think some people will like that. So it definitely restricts that and helps the citizenry, you know, advance their rights.
So if it's a sort of within a statutory framework, that it's only within the Administrative Procedures Act. If in the worst case scenario for, say, you there's some rule to stop people from getting cancer from some pollutant, and it wasn't clearly in the statute, and some corporation finds a judge and wherever to say that's no longer permitted because I, as the judge, say you can't stop us from polluting. You're telling me, correct me if I'm wrong, Congress can always say, okay, we just have to be clear in our new law that, yes, go ahead and regulate that pollutant. Don't let people put that in the air or the water or whatever.
No, that's exactly right. So, you know, Congress is the one that's charged under the Constitution with making the rules that people must follow. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's the structure of our Constitution. It's there to preserve people's liberty. And, you know, if Congress decides that those types of polluters and that type of pollution should be unlawful, then it's up to Congress to do that. I will also say that state governments who are have the primary responsibility for regulating the citizenry under their police powers have environmental laws themselves.
Yep.
So I don't think those people would be without recourse if, you know, a polluter, you know, hurt people, cause cancer. I think there's been a lot of famous lawsuits. Aaron Brockovich comes to mind, where people sued in state court and got big judgments against polluters. So I don't think, you know, just because Congress hasn't done it or the administrative agency can't make new law outside of Congress, I don't think
there's potentially without recourse. Potentially thousands of venues for recourse beyond Congress. This is what I'm hearing you say. It's state legislatures. It's state courts. It could even be city councils where citizens could have...
Whoever's responsible for making the law within the state.
Or permit.
That's you can go.
Cities have authority over permitting.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And land use.
Yeah, exactly.
I heard some of the Democrats saying, well, we think it's a disaster, but all of the climate stuff that the Democrats passed in the last couple of years, they say they wrote most of these regulatory authorizing statutes anticipating a post-Chevron world. Do you see anything to that, that in the last, you know, like I think these are all these like sort of broad statutes in the 60s and 70s and 80s. And some agencies have sort of gotten in the habit of the last 30, 40 years of promulgating a lot of rules that maybe go beyond what the specific statute is. But they say, you know, the last few years, all the environmental stuff, they're a lot more specific and they're sort of written to, you know, be solid against any attacks that may come from Chevron. Is there anything to that?
Well, for the environmental statutes, I think the last time an environmental statute was amended by Congress was 1990. That was the Clean Air Act. Mm-hmm. Oh. And I think you can see that that might be a problem that was created by Chevron because the agencies were allowed to make all these rules, mm-hmm. and courts had to defer to them. Congress hasn't updated any of these statutes.
Yeah, except for, I right. meant the,
which is their job.
Yeah, I just meant the Inflation Reduction Act. I heard chatter that was written to try to survive attacks if Chevron fell.
Yeah, I don't think the Inflation Reduction Act did anything to alter any of the substance of any of the environmental laws. So, you know,
maybe not. Yeah,
I haven't seen anything.
But I will say
this. With the major environmental laws, like West Virginia v. EPA was about Obama's Clean Power Plan.
Right.
And then Trump's attempt to repeal that with his ACE rule. And then, you know, President Biden's got his own, you know, his own rule that's going to be coming out. And that was about emissions from power plants. That ship, the Chevron ship sailed on that with West Virginia v. EPA. The Supreme Court said, look, if you were going to try and remake the entire energy sector through a rulemaking by EPA, you're going to have to show us in one of these statutes where there's a clear statement that Congress allowed you to do that.
Frank,
so that's the major questions doctrine, which it still applies. And that was going to apply whether Chevron stuck around or not.
Frank, what I'm hearing you say is that this decision can and should be celebrated as a win for democracy because people could petition Congress. Congress writes the rules. And it sounds to me like we're going to end this absurdity of presidents passing executive actions with great fanfare, only to have them reversed 4 years later if the opposing party wins. Is any of that accurate?
No, I think that's really accurate. Whether Congress will do it is another story, but I think this puts pressure on them to actually do their duty that the Constitution assigns to them to make the laws. And, you know, I think this will help because agencies aren't just going to be able to, you know, do whatever they want. And the American people, if they want regulations of power plants, if they want global warming regulations, climate change regulations, they're going to go to Congress, and Congress at some point is going to have to listen to the people.
Yeah.
So that's the way the Constitution is set up.
Dan, you listening?
So then,
Congress, do your job.
So then net, is it fair to say we're likely to see environmental protections rolled back in the next couple of years? And if we want to reduce the incredible damages from global warming, the courts are likely not going to help. So Congress is going to have to pass more stringent environmental protections because out of this decision, we're going to lose a lot of environmental regulations we have now. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, I don't think you're going to lose any of the current environmental regulations you have now. The EPA is not going to be able to remake the entire energy sector through rulemakings, right? If you want to do that, that's going to have to come from Congress. And I will say the states can do a lot of stuff for environmental protection. I mean, states have legislatures. They pass laws. And they are the primary entity under our Constitution that is responsible for you know, regulating land use or clean water or what their power plants can do within their borders.
Well, right? Let me say, in the last 45 seconds, you've got the floor. What would you like to tell our maybe hundreds of millions of people that are listening right now about your work and about what you see of the future of this jurisprudence?
No, so, I mean, you know, at Pacific Legal Foundation, we take cases where people have been harmed by the government's overreach. And, you know, rolling back Chevron is an important step in that process and helping our clients, but we're by no means done. So there's lots of unconstitutional shenanigans going on where the government is skirting the separation of powers, and we're going to keep fighting that and representing our clients and protecting their liberty.
Deference.
I appreciate you guys having me on.
Our deference next, Frank?
That's an open question. We would rather the non-delegation doctrine be next.
We'll see.
So where Congress can't.
And check out the Pacific Legal Foundation online. I'm sure they're partying into the night with their big victory. Meanwhile, you could party for the next few minutes while we take a break, and we'll be right back on Beyond the Beltway from Chicago.
In the new video series, Fault Lines, Professor Vody Bauckham examines the threat of woke social doctrine versus biblical justice.
The religion of anti-racism has no redemption. We have to be right about what God requires in this critical moment.
Discover the fault lines beneath today's cultural divide.
What God are you trying to appease?
Fault Lines, the 10-part video series and essential 6-part study guide. Available at salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.
I love this song!
I love nachos.
Loving everything? You might be buzzed.
You know what I'd love? A ride when it's time to head out.
If you see a buzz warning sign, call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably?
It's been 23 minutes since I ate.
I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Beyond the Beltway with Bruce Dumont. Filling in for the great Bruce Dumont is Chris Veronis and Dan Johnson. Chris, we're here without our leader, Bruce. We're going to do our best to keep the ship afloat. I'm not sure if we're up to the
I'm
test.
I'm rowing hard.
We got to.
I'm in the galley.
I think there's water everywhere. Yeah. We got our cups. Toss some water overboard. We're doing our best on the 44th year anniversary of Bruce Dumont's Beyond the Beltway.
As I recall, there were some notable guests on this show.
Rahm Emanuel.
Ronald Reagan. Barack Obama.
Abraham Lincoln.
I mean, if the internet said it, it's true.
Right, right. You know? It was out there. Have you ever been to the Abraham Lincoln Museum?
Yeah, I have. And it's pretty incredible for all of our viewers in Illinois that have to visit it. And it's extremely interactive. And I have to say, having seen it, you get he got pilloried.
They couldn't believe he was the president. He's like, you backwoods, ignorant ape.
A baboon.
Yeah, right.
There were several presidents who've been assassinated, but no president has reached martyr level status.
That's
Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah, right.
Not only was he assassinated, but I lost two kids.
Right.
He suffered severe depression, lost his mother. His wife had depression. He had a civil war. Unbelievable.
And
he kept the country together.
And you know,
unbelievable story.
Amazing. And I just noticed in Springfield, they've retained like a block or two or three downtown where they're as if they were in 1850s.
Yeah.
The house that Abraham Lincoln grew up in.
Yeah.
And you know what blew my mind? A guy grew up about a decade after Lincoln died. A guy grew up, same neighborhood. It was like a wild, immigrant, rowdy, mixed neighborhood in Springfield that Lincoln grew up in. Julius Rosenwald, the guy who started, I forget, I think it was Sears. Yeah. Mm. He grew up a block away from Abraham Lincoln's home. And then he spent most of his fortune basically on African-American liberation.
Wow.
The Rosenwald schools in the South, there were like 3,000 of them he just paid for. He paid for like a Rosenwald fund for like every mid-20th century or early 20th century important African-American intellectual or artist. He basically funded them.
something in the air on that block.
Right. He was inspired that, like, yeah. You know, so like you can think big.
So Illinois, or even if you're not from Illinois, you should visit the Lincoln Museum. You should also visit the cemetery where there is an amazing story where for a long, long time, grave robbers wanted to steal the body of Abraham Lincoln. They were foiled by the Secret Service, and to hide the coffin, it sat under scrap wood in a mausoleum, under scrap wood, of the martyred president of the United States for a couple months.
Really?
Until they raised money. His son, Tad, I think, raised money, and they did it right.
Wow. That's bananas.
Yeah.
Speaking of history, I was just reading a book about that 1776 summer, and it is now in the central point is it is impossible to think of the Constitutional Convention and the Declaration of Independence without the impending invasion of Great Britain to their colonies. The greatest naval armada the world had ever seen sailing across the Atlantic. We were gonna lose. They could have taken over New York, where the battle was joined, easy. They held back. But the threat of finally, you know, King George turned on America, and that helped flip the middle people, right, the swing voters in those colonies to say, like, forget it. I finally want independence. It's a great, great book.
Speaking of swing people out there.
Yeah, and, this can go a lot of ways, Chris. Be careful. It's a family show, Chris.
To me, there's only one place it can go. People tune in to Beyond the Beltway for a reason.
Yeah.
By your own admission,
yeah.
The president didn't have a good night last Thursday.
Atrocious night.
Yeah, you could say that.
It's the worst night of his political career. Well, top 10.
Maybe not the last, unfortunately. So my question for you.
Yeah.
You know, President Biden had a bit of a reprieve.
Next day?
The Democratic leadership.
Jacked up Joe, man.
Jeffries, Schumer.
Everyone said.
The Obama, Clinton.
They
stood by their man.
Yeah, you had a mulligan. Tough
what,
night.
What does Joe Biden need to do in the next 10 days to get the spring back in his step?
I think, you know, the rallies are fine. They're good. You know, when he, you know, said, you're going to get knocked down, you get back up again. That's all fine, right? To be fair, he didn't really get knocked down. He kind of slipped, right? So kind of when you fall, you get back up
again. As one does when you're 81 years old.
People fall when you're in your 80s, right? They do. But what I
sometimes
think he needs—
Sometimes they don't get up.
That, you know, that's true. I think he's at his best as our president. Like every time he has a state dinner and he's playing three-dimensional chess, he had a state dinner for Japan a month or a month and a half ago, reuniting that amazing relationship, which if you kind of think about it, right, it's only 60, 70 years ago, we're at war. We dropped two nuclear bombs on that island, and now it's like our strongest ally in Asia. It's, you know, rather extraordinary. And I give a little credit to Rahm Emanuel for keeping that relationship so close and so tight. So to answer your question, I think he's got to continue to be a very successful president because Donald Trump is quicker. He's a great self-promoter.
Only 3 years separate the two men.
That's it.
It's incredible.
Yeah, it is. It is.
It makes you think that something's going on with Biden
you don't
see in other major political figures.
Let me ask
Bernie
you this.
Sanders.
Let
Bernie
me ask
Sanders
you.
In particular.
Don't you think when Donald Trump goes on his rants and he starts talking about the craziest, nuttiest things, when he's like, you know, there was this time if I had to choose between a shock bite and electricity and being electrocuted, you know, I would tell the doctor, do I want a shock bite or do I want to get electrocuted? And the whole audience is like zoning out and they're all burning up in the heat. And he's like, I don't care about you. I just want your votes. Don't you think he gets
a
little nutty?
I got one better, or the Hannibal Lecter thing. Where did that come from?
Right? Trump gets bananas sometimes.
Yeah, he does. But this is, I think, an Achilles heel that Democrats haven't woken up to, which is people know that Trump is crazy. That is baked into public opinion.
Yeah.
It's a given. There's nothing he can say or do that'll make him more crazy.
Right.
So you want to use it as a political cudgel, and it's ineffective. I think it kind of bothers you that you cannot beat up. You can't go crazy on a crazy man.
You can't.
Just come clean.
You can't.
This is just between you and me.
It's true.
A conversation.
Just you and me and everybody listening. But you can't. You can't, like, make fun of somebody. Because you know what he is when he's so crazy? He's funny. Donald Trump's very funny.
Well, one of the funniest things he said is when Don Lemon, you know, formerly of CNN, you know, when he would go off on Donald Trump, all Donald Trump would do in a tweet is, Don Lemon, comma, the dumbest man in America, comma, right. And go on.
He's juvenile. Donald Trump is juvenile, but he's funny.
Yeah.
He's funny.
You got to give him that.
So it's sort of like ultimately, how many swing voters, persuadable voters are like, I know he's a bad president. I know he's corrupt. I know he's out for himself. He's really funny, though. The guy's entertaining.
Which, like it or not, this was a book, Amusing Ourselves to Death, which is a good read if any of our listeners are interested, talked about entertainment value in modern culture, particularly presidential campaigns.
He's a celebrity.
And here we are. This is the culmination of it.
Right.
Donald Trump could be why this man is Lazarus. He cannot die.
Right.
Because he has an entertainment value that few others understand.
Like,
let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Are you nervous at all, just a little bit? Again, this is a conversation between you and me.
No one else is listening.
So you could be totally honest.
I can be candid.
Are you worried about this bubbling undercurrent of anti-establishment, anti-incumbent mood, not just in this country, but worldwide?
But
in
France.
Worldwide. France, where today there was a setback in the first election.
Yeah. There.
In Canada, a safe liberal seat went to the Conservatives.
Yeah.
Rishi Sunak in the UK.
He's
going to get wiped off.
Oh.
Wiped off the map.
Adios.
India. Big setback for Modi, South Africa.
Yeah.
Mexico got its first woman Jewish president.
Yeah, that was the same party.
Not so good for the establishment. So, could we see that in the United States?
Are you saying
in 2024, a la Brexit? Brexit anticipated the Trump victory. How are you feeling?
Incumbents are always an easy pinata. I actually think the Republicans should have picked somebody else, if from their perspective, because Trump is wearing the baggage of reality, and somebody new, people can project their aspirations and hopes on him or her. You can't pretend Donald Trump's going to be anything than a chaotic, grifting, lying joker, and people know it. And some people are able to look themselves in the mirror and say, I'm okay with that. A lot of people have trouble. I call them Biden Republicans. I'm also going to call the end of this section. We're going to take a commercial break, and we'll be right back for perhaps the greatest radio show ever heard in the United States of America, Beyond the Beltway with Bruce DeMont. We're going to do our best to maintain this tradition tonight, and the listeners are going to be the judge.
Because there's 44 more years after this, at least.
We've hit the halfway point tonight. Officially, the halfway point. We're live from Chicago.
Kids want to share what's going on in their lives with the adults around them. Parents, grandparents, teachers, coaches, and more. They want to know you're listening, and they want to listen to you. They want your input and guidance, early and often, on all kinds of topics. When it comes to a serious subject like underage drinking, they want to know your expectations, as well as how and why, as a young person, they should avoid alcohol. How you talk about it will change as your child grows. But the important thing is to talk about it. Not just once for an hour when you think the time is right, but in 60 one-minute conversations and more that are part of your everyday talks. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. When you need me, I'll be here.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably?
It's been 23 minutes since I ate.
I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
We're back on Beyond the Beltway with Bruce Dumont, Chris Varonis, and Dan Johnson, your hosts for the evening, as we enter our final segment with you. Wait a minute. Chris has something
Dan,
to say.
I've got something to say, and I think I'm going to say this on behalf, but not for, people who are going to pull the lever for Trump.
People are.
Yeah, and maybe this would be a little educational from you.
Yeah.
I mean, coming to us from Wilmette.
80 million people are going to pull that lever.
You pulled up here in the studio in a stretch Humvee, you know, straight from Wilmette.
Driven by my Jasper, my butler.
If I could speak for why people are going to go for Trump.
Why are you?
Well, I'm going to tell you why many people are solidly pro-Trump, and this is an incredible political phenomenon.
Yeah.
Where a guy like Donald Trump, as divisive and controversial and outrageous as he is, somehow has this preternatural ability to bring out the worst in his opponents. It's really incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. What Trump says he's going to do, but in just doesn't get to either because he forgets or he's just incompetent or bumbling.
Yeah.
Or his staff changes the subject pretty quickly. Somehow the Democrats do. We always heard about chaos and disorganization with Donald Trump. We see the same thing with Biden. And so now people don't really see a choice, Dan. And for every time I heard the word fascism come out of the Washington Post or the New York Times, if I had a nickel, I'm telling you, there'd be billions.
Do you have any Thousand Island?
I'm saying the country didn't fall off a cliff, Dan.
Could
in
I have some
the
Thousand
four years
Island?
Of Trump.
I'd like some
it
Thousand
didn't.
Island with your word salad, please.
Yeah. Everyone said this country was going to slip into fascism during the Trump years. Yeah. It didn't happen.
Okay. We're about 10 minutes away. 10 minutes away from assassinating members of Congress and installing
Dan, and the institutions held.
That's your low bar.
The institutions held.
So
no court backed Trump up on his claims.
Oh,
the military
thank goodness.
Opposed Trump.
Thank goodness.
Well, it just goes to show you that this country has built up a political tradition that it's not going to part ways with. It's based on a constitutional order, and not even a pyromaniac like Donald Trump can burn it up.
Are you?
And so, Dan, yeah. you've undermined, the Democrats have undermined their own claim against Trump.
Because we survived him. Because the country
because
survived
their dire predictions, their overheated, outrageous predictions didn't come to pass. So,
are you maybe minimizing January 6th a touch?
Well,
let me
Dan,
ask, are you minimizing it?
Just want you to own up to the fact that Democrats have been overheated, have impeached this guy.
Should he have been impeached?
The first time, absolutely not. And really? This guy was sailing the Russia investigation. Give me a break. It was a waste of time for an entire year.
This guy
was sailing to reelection until COVID. Until COVID happened.
Yeah.
And unforced errors, self-inflicted wounds, no question about it. But I just want a little bit of intellectual honesty from you.
I want a little bit.
That Democrats mirror the worst in Trump. He's got that ability to bring the worst out of his opponents.
Okay, Gregory Hines, who just tap danced away from answering the question.
That's
which
your job, though.
You asked that
That's
of yourself.
That's your job, Dan.
You know what's weird, Chris? You started out by saying, let me tell you why people are going to vote for Trump, and then you just started tap dancing. And I don't know.
How did I do?
You served up a word salad. It was delicious. I just need some Thousand Island with it. But basically what I heard you say, and I've heard like Republicans say this, they're like, hey, you know what? Trump couldn't have been that bad. We still have elections, right? That's basically where you're at. You're like, I mean, sure,
no,
he tried. No,
no,
here's what you said.
No,
my turn.
No.
You said, look, he absolutely tried to install himself in 2020. No doubt. He had a mob. They raided the Capitol. But guess what? It didn't work. So therefore, is he really that bad? That's basically your point.
Well, Donald Trump pathetically tried to insert himself. It was doomed from the beginning.
Was it?
Absolutely.
If they were about doomed half an hour earlier, they would have been members of Congress.
I don't understand understand how this guy could be a political mastermind and an incompetent at the same time.
Here's why. He's so good at selling totally defective products, and people keep buying it. He sells Trump University. It's a ripoff. People enroll. He sells Trump steak. It's disgusting. People buy it. He is good. Like he sold Trump skyscrapers. It's up. Those buildings are great. But guess what?
No.
They're cheating on their taxes.
Just
he keeps selling. He's the greatest salesman of our country. He is. I just wish he would sell something like he should get back into real estate development. He was good at it.
Dan, you're great at giving love. I mean, the people who know you.
People
your,
need
your
love.
Friends,
Donald Trump needs some love.
Not so much on the honesty.
He needs some love.
Peace. No honesty.
No honesty?
No. I want a little bit of honesty.
That
Democrats have gone off the deep end and now are paying for it right now.
Because
there's no objective difference between the Democratic Party, Joe Biden, and now Donald Trump. Because both campaigns are based on a foundation of lies.
Because they're both for letting Putin take over Ukraine. They're both for that, right? They're both for overturning Roe v. Wade.
Their whole narrative, right?
Of course they're not.
During the debate,
Joe
Biden, not one person died under my presidency. That was a bold-faced lie. Yeah. Either he was lying and he knew it, or he forgot.
I think it was
either or, it's on him.
You know what's funny? Donald Trump. He is. He's objectively funny, but it is absurd to pretend that he isn't 1,000x the liars of any other politician, Republican or Democratic. He is in a standard of his own.
So basically, you're confirming that the Democrats' only path to victory is to irradiate Trump.
No,
they've learned nothing.
I think
they've learned
you
nothing
can't
these
irradiate
last 8 years.
That monster.
That's what's going to happen.
It's about, ultimately, do people want chaos or competence? And my friends, I hope you choose competence over chaos.
I hope Joe Biden doesn't fall.
Me too. Meanwhile, Plain Speaking Americans from coast to coast and border to border are delighted that you've joined us tonight. Chris Vronis and Dan Johnson signing off on behalf of the great Bruce Dumont from Beyond the Beltway. Good night from Chicago!